Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Jessica with Turn the Page podcast, and my guest today is, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Hallie Sutton, and I am the author of the upcoming book, The Lady Upstairs.
And where are you recording out of today?
I am recording out of Los Angeles, sunny Los Angeles today. It is like 58 degrees, which for us is very, very cold.
Yeah, it's almost 80 degrees for us. Yeah, I know. I don't get it. For those who are listening, this is that very, because sometimes these air a little later, this is that very bizarre week in New York where it was freezing cold last week and then suddenly it's 80 degrees. So I don't know, but you know, LA is apparently colder than us today.
Yeah.
So glad to hear you are in LA right now, because your book, The Lady Upstairs, talks about a lot of famous people who are on the Me Too list, I suppose.
Yes.
Or
yes.
There, a lot of them are actually, I think they're more like they're stand-ins for them. But if you read
yes.
the book, you can pretty much figure out who they're based out of or who they're a conglomerate of. Would you like to tell the audience a little bit about The Lady Upstairs and
sure.
How you came up with the idea?
Sure. The Lady Upstairs is a modern feminist noir about women in Los Angeles who run a blackmail agency targeting bad men in Los Angeles, like Harvey Weinstein. There's a pretty direct Harvey Weinstein stand-in.
Oh, there sure is. Yeah.
And so when the book opens, my main character, Jo, has been working at this agency for a few years, and she's in the midst of a big operation where she's trained a girl to go after this kind of Harvey Weinstein guy. And if it goes well, not only will it be a professional success for her, it will also help pay off her debt to her boss, who she's never really met before, a woman that they call the Lady Upstairs. And so, of course, the operation does not go well, and Jo starts making bad and desperate decisions to try to pay her boss back, and it starts to unwind a little bit. So for me, the inspiration for the book kind of came from a couple of different sources. Jo was a very strong character in my head early on, even before I figured out what book she was going to be in, what story she was going to be in. I've also always loved noir, and when I moved to Los Angeles for grad school about 5 years ago, I thought that might be a good way to pair those two together. And I really wanted to write a book that was told from the point of view of the femme fatale, that she's not kind of this shadowy character who exists to cause trouble for the man. She's a full person on her own. But she also, I wanted the book to be that these women are literally femme fatales. They're not, you know, projections of male anxiety. They literally, their job, like if Jo had a business card, it would be, I eat men, you know, like
yeah.
She destroys men.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, I thought it was a really cool idea. I really liked just sort of how all the relationships played together in a web. There's also Jo's friend, is it Lou?
Yes, Lou. Lou.
Yes.
So Lou is Jo's coworker and Lou, Jo's best friend, and the woman who kind of set her on the path to doing what she's doing. You know, maybe a little something more between them there, but she's a big part of the reason that Jo is actually involved in the organization is partially because Lou got her involved, but I think also because she wants to stay close to Lou.
Yeah, I liked that about it. You know, Jo and Lou's orientation, I'm going to say straightforward, which sounds weird now that I'm saying that. It was fluid, I think, mm-hmm. is the term that I'm looking for. You know, I mean, Jo tells you very early on that they have sort of something with Jackal.
Yes.
But then there's also Jo and Lou, and you know, that there was a bond there, and I liked it because, again, like you were talking about sort of going beyond the caricature of the femme fatale. Usually the femme fatale is there to also be like ensnare men, but that's not necessarily, you know, even though that's what Jo's doing, you know, like relationship with men is not really necessarily her end game. Her deepest relationships could be with somebody like Lou.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And that was something that I was very consciously trying to play with too, kind of what you said about it being fluid, that it's not necessarily that Jo thinks of herself as primarily attracted to men or women. You know, a big part of it was that I think Jo is a character, as a person who's trying to be a lot more hardened than she is. And I kind of wanted to show in both of her primary relationships, which are with Robert Jackal, who also works for the organization, is kind of the muscle and the photographer. And then with Lou, that she kind of can't escape those bonds, that she's still drawn into them despite herself.
Yeah, definitely. So why do you think now is, I mean, I know what I think the answer to it is, but why do you think now is a good time to be sort of playing with themes like noir, but also within the Me Too movement?
Yeah, good question. I've actually been thinking about that a lot. You know, a noir is so much about this like very pessimistic view of the world. And that's not necessarily the view that I hold of the world, but so much about noir is really kind of about institution down inequity, that like there's this, traditionally it's kind of the everyday man who doesn't really have the chance that he should have because of forces beyond his control. And I think that that very much resonates with everything happening in the world right now, and particularly things happening politically in America, you know, regardless of where you stand. But I think that there is just this kind of feeling of we are pawns getting a little bit battered. And I think we do have agency, but it is maybe not the agency that we could or should have. And I think that noir really speaks to that, this feeling of kind of like your fate that's a little bit beyond your control. And I think that that's really fun to play with that from particularly a female-driven perspective, and kind of threading in the Me Too movement, because that's exactly what the Me Too movement is about, right? Is these men from the top down exerting power over women in these ways that often show up in sexual assault, sexual harassment, sexual violence. And so for me, The Lady Upstairs wasn't written directly as a response to the Me Too movement, but it did kind of dovetail with it. I mean, there have been stories about the casting couch director for as long as there have been casting couches. So it's not like a new thing that I was kind of playing into those tropes, but it is very, yeah, just kind of still very sadly relevant. And so I think that there's still a lot of space for that to be an important part of literature and film today.
I definitely agree. And one of the things, you know, that I find most interesting about it is, and this is kind of what I loved about the women in The Lady Upstairs. I mean, you know, despite everything going a little haywire, you know, they unapologetically use sex as a weapon. But a lot of times, you know, people will complain, oh, you know, well, so-and-so got Me Too'd, but really what happened is that a woman exposed something very intimate about herself and a very, you know, certain illicit acts that either she didn't feel comfortable doing or felt that she had to do to get ahead. And really, like, a lot of times, except for in the case of Weinstein, who's now in jail, yeah, right. Because, you know, that's like such the rare outcome of it.
Yeah,
or even
or
even Bill Cosby, which I mean, those rumors had been around forever.
Yeah,
like people had been, I remember first hearing them in the 90s. But, you know, that is so rarely outcome. And usually, you know, he gets to keep working after a walk of shame and maybe a few years of, you know, pretending or, you know, like,
oh, or gets appointed to the Supreme Court.
Or that. Yes. Or, you know, like, well, I'm a family man now, or, you know, it's not the way that I remembered it.
Right.
And it just keeps moving. And the woman will forever be that person who basically was bared naked in front of everybody and humiliated. So mm-hmm. I kind of liked that flip-flop that you mm-hmm. did, where it wasn't humiliation. This is part of the job.
Right. It's almost like an armor they get to wear, which I don't know is necessarily the most positive relationship to sex or this relationship to sex I want to have, but I definitely, I wanted it to be that they are using it as a weapon, as a tool in this kind of fight for power and agency. And again, I'm not, I think we could have a whole conversation about whether that's actually feminist or not, but it was fun to write.
For sure. And I think, you know, there are many different views as to mm-hmm. what is, but certainly, you know, like the organization, it wasn't like they were being victimized.
Right.
Which also kind of just brings into, you know, the fact that for years, people have been trying to legitimize people who, and again, this is like completely different than what Joe does, but sex workers and their mm-hmm. rights and sort of legitimizing that, you know, there should be some protections for people who do that as work.
Absolutely. And I personally wholeheartedly agree with that. I mean, it's not going away, so we should regulate it and make it safer. And but there's still such big stigma attached to it. And I kind of didn't even want that to be a question in the novel of like,
it wasn't. And it was very well done. And it wasn't,
thank you.
But of course, you know, it's always in the back of my mind, and it sort of mm-hmm. comes about, you know, thinking about what you're talking about, whether this is feminist or not feminist, you know, like there's different waves of feminism. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we should all try to do better with each subsequent wave. And, you know, I mean, when I was younger and growing up, you know, you kind of are, even though you're a feminist, like you're being, I guess, socialized into feminism, like that wave was more like, oh, but those women are humiliating themselves.
Right.
But then
right.
as I got older, you know, into my teens, a lot of people started looking at it differently. Like, mm-hmm. well, it's honest work. And, you mm-hmm. know, I mean, in a way, you know, they're laughing you all the way to the bank. So shouldn't they be protected and be able to keep their hard earned money? So I found that, and that was kind of like a bitter pill to swallow at one point, because, you know, like when you grow up and you're showed something one way, mm-hmm. And then you start kind of thinking about it another way, like, yeah, these are people, they're, these women are feeding their families, they're working, so.
Right, and I think with sex work in particular, I don't know if this is where we had planned on the podcast going, but, you know, the stigma really only goes one way. It's about the women who do it and not the men who are paying for it, which it's like, you know, that's what I find so frustrating about it too, is whether or not you agree with it, it still is just another example of like, okay, women can't do anything right. You know, it's there are two parties here, but that's not what we're looking at.
So the lady upstairs, so how did you come up with that name, and how did you start sort of weaving that character together?
Sure. so, you know, what's funny is that name was always just kind of there. And I, for a while, I had another nickname for her, and I was calling her Mrs. Chandler as an homage to Raymond Chandler. And then basically everyone who read the novel was like, okay, that's a little on the nose. And so I just, so I got rid of that. But it just kind of was what I had called her as a nickname. When I had this idea for this kind of shadowy figure, you know, kind of like a crime mob boss type person. And it just kind of stuck. And what's funny is that it took me a really long time to decide on that as the title. And then when I did, I was kind of open to changing it, but couldn't find anything I liked better. And when I did eventually sell the book to Putnam and my editor, Danielle Dietrich, she kind of had the same note where she said, you know, we're gonna like look at the title. Maybe there's something else we like better. And then like 2 or 3 weeks later, she came back to me and was like, no, I really think that's the title, which was funny because that was my exact experience of it, where I was a little bit like, is that the title? And then the more I sat with it, the more I was like, oh yeah, that is the title. So.
Well, the title was definitely not going to be Joe's Girls.
No. I didn't want girl in the title actually at all. So.
that was actually perfect. I can't really imagine it being called anything else.
Oh, thank you.
So how have you felt about releasing a book during the whole pandemic?
You know, everyone told me that my debut year was going to be this crazy, stressful whirlwind of anxiety and confusion, but I don't think they meant it like this. So,
listen, I had said last year when I was at New York Comic Con that I thought I needed a break from New York Comic Con, but I didn't mean that everybody should take a break from New York Comic Con. So I see what right. you're saying.
Right, right.
Nobody expected this.
So, you know, this being my first book, it is a very kind of surreal experience because I don't know any other way to launch a book. So I'm like, I think it'll be very interesting to have had this experience. And then hopefully my second book, whenever, if ever that comes out, will be a very, it'll keep the experience feeling fresh for me because it'll be totally new if I can go into bookstores and talk to people there and do events in person. My book was originally scheduled to come out in mid-July, and we ended up pushing it back kind of at the beginning of everything with COVID-19. And I feel very lucky that we got to do that, that we had the runway to do that, because I think everyone has kind of attained a different like rhythm with stuff now, and it's kind of a little more, we kind of understand what we're doing. So there have been a few things that are kind of a bummer. You know, it would be really nice to be able to go out with a bunch of my friends and celebrate this. It would be really nice to go meet readers in person and to sign books in person. But on the other hand, I'm also getting to do a bunch of events for bookstores across the country that I probably would not have gotten to do otherwise. So, you know, there's silver linings there, and it's still my childhood dream coming true. So however it happens, I'm very excited.
Did you always want to be a writer then?
Pretty much always, yes. I had a brief flirtation with wanting to be an Egyptologist after seeing the movie The Mummy, like 45 times.
Well, I mean, come on, who wouldn't?
Right? It seemed very glamorous and exciting.
After the fact, when I realized that Evie was a librarian, I realized yes. that I chose the perfect career.
Perfect. So The Mummy was formative for both of us. So, yeah, but basically since the time I was little and... I used to, when I was around 7 or 8, I had this book series that I was just in love with. It was the Ruby and the Smoke book series by Philip Pullman. And I used to write letters to the main character, Sally Lockhart, because I wanted her to know about my life as much as I knew about her life because she felt so real to me. So I think that was a pretty good indicator of where I was headed.
So thrillers. Yes. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the popularity of thrillers because they have become my pandemic comfort food.
Oh, lovely. So what are you finding comfort food? What makes them comfort food for you right now?
Well, even though they are books about crazy, horrible things and unspeakable things that happen, they have a conclusion.
Yeah, that's true.
And in the real world, you don't know what the conclusion is going to be or if there is a conclusion. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of almost, it almost feels good to kind of get your heart racing about something mm-hmm. and then know that it's going to end.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And that there will be, yeah, the resolution to it will be neat and kind of pulled together. Absolutely.
So are you working on a second book?
I am working on a second book. It's still very, very early days. So I have no idea what the status of it will be, but it is kind of, it's another feminist noir set in Los Angeles, and it's actually about a woman who is a former child starlet who runs a murder bus tour now, and on one of her tour stops, she finds a body and gets pulled into the investigation.
Wow, please. Like, I want to read that book yesterday. That sounds great.
Thank you. Well, I hope my editor feels the same way. So,
what kind of research did you do when you were writing The Lady Upstairs, just about, you know, different predatory men in politics and the arts? Did you, you know, was it mostly, you know, ripped from the headlines, or did you like speak to people in the industry?
You know, it was more ripped from the headlines than speaking to people in the industry. I didn't want it to be, you know, the Harvey Weinstein character is pretty recognizable, but I didn't want it to necessarily be direct parallels because there's also just like this pervasive problem, right? It doesn't have to be specifically one man I'm speaking to. But as for research, you know, I had always loved noir, but I really kind of immersed myself in noir very intentionally, both film and literature. Read a lot of Raymond Chandler, James Cain, Megan Abbott, Vicky Hendricks, watched Body Heat a lot, is one of my favorite movies, Chinatown, Gilda, Sunset Boulevard, kind of just like really like drowned myself in the classics there, trying to kind of like channel that noir rhythm and a feel for the story. And then I did some research about LA in a weird way where I, in the book, I was really kind of more interested in LA as like mythological place, which is like very, you know, you see LA on film and TV and it's portrayed in this certain way, or the kind of understanding we have about it with noir and different things, that it's not, that's not really what the city is. It's what people think the city is. And so I was very interested in that. So I did, I actually went on a bunch of murder bus tours and kind of like celebrity homes tours and different things that talked more about like trying to give people the LA that they thought they wanted to see versus the LA that I live in every day. Two very different creatures.
Are you reading anything now? Do you read a lot of thriller type books, or are you more like a cozy mystery type?
I do read a lot of thrillers. I actually just finished The Searcher by Tana French, which I loved. I loved that. It was so good. I also just read not that long ago, fact crime book, People Who Eat Darkness by Richard Lloyd Perry. It was great. I'm currently reading one called The Ant Hill by Julianne Pacheco, which is kind of more magical realism, set in an orphanage in Medellin. I kind of am reading across the board. I find myself really drawn at the moment to books that are set in other countries, other places, because I'm like, I'm ready to travel and I can't. So it's kind of my little armchair travel escape.
Definitely. I think you're not alone in that.
Yeah.
I think many of us would like to be able to travel at some point soon.
Right.
Well, yeah. I want to thank you so much for talking to us. And I really enjoyed Lady Upstairs. I think that our listeners really would. I don't want to give too much away because it goes to a lot of different places, but I think we've laid the ground for it. And I think, you know, just the whole conversation, even if we did just touch upon, you know, what is feminist and what, you know, like that there's different layers to it, I think it kind of plays into it. It's important because I think a lot of times, you know, even though they were taking down these men, a lot of times, you know, there's an empowerment in it, but then, you know, the way that the world looks at it is different.
Right, right. And some of the empowerment is coming on the backs of other women. You know, it's not,
yes,
it's very
absolutely.
Clean. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That is something I was very conscious of as I was writing it, that like, that's a messy dynamic for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Well, once again, thank you. This was Jessica, and my guest was
Hallie Sutton. Thank you so much, Jessica.
Oh,
this
no,
was
you're
so
welcome.
Lovely.
And we are going to close this chapter, turn the page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.